Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. And that's it. Week one is in the books. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. I'm joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold from North America. And Jeff, it was a week that didn't produce a mass of close games across the NFL, but what it produced, as always, was so many storylines and so many things that we can get our teeth into over the course of the next hour.
Well, I tell you what, even from the very start, the first game, the Kansas City New England game, all the way to the two games last night, it was outstanding entertainment. I won't say it's outstanding football, because there were some cases it wasn't very good, but it was outstanding entertainment. And you know, again, I think that there are a lot of things we could chew on today.
Yeah, and Jeff, I got to enjoy it in the studio. I know we'll get you over very soon. I got to enjoy it with Solomon Wilcots. I got to enjoy it sitting in a different chair, as I know this is news you've been trying to break for a couple of podcasts now. So I got to experience a different viewpoint and get to ask the questions instead of answering them. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun in the studio, and appreciate everyone who kind of sent good wishes on Twitter. And yeah, it's kind of rare. I'm not used to that.
Well, I tell you what, it was. I followed it as close as I could follow it, and certainly on Twitter, the reaction was really, really positive. And that's something I think you've been destined to do. I know from when we go around and do take our podcast on the road, you do an outstanding job of running the show. So sitting in the corner seat, probably just easy for you.
Jeff, thank you very much. Before we get into the games, breaking them down and making our picks for next week, the picks were an issue for both of us in week one, but I feel like we're not alone. It was hard to predict all the way these games were going to play out. But I wanted to pick up on something that you were doing last week, because I kept seeing the tweets of you kind of traveling across country, and we didn't talk about it on the podcast last week. And so I know you're back home now, and that's done and dusted, but I kind of looked at your tweets, and Jeff's here and Jeff's there, and he's driving all across America, and didn't really pay attention to why you were. I didn't ask you when we were doing the podcast last week. We just literally rang you up, did the podcast, and then we kind of went our separate ways. But then I read about the story of how you were helping out a former player of yours called John Chick. Can you fill us in on what you've been up to and why you did it?
Well, I tell you what, this business is, you know, we as coaches and players, you know, you sign up for it. You know that getting fired, getting traded, getting released, that's all part of it, and it's going to happen to everybody in the business. But it's the collateral damage, Neil, that those decisions make. And John is a guy that played for me, I guess, 3 years here. He played for the Jags. He, excuse me, and he'll go into the Hall of Fame as one of the best players ever to play in the CFL. He's a great guy. He and his wife, Catherine, you know, have 8 children, and they're all between the ages of 12 and infancy. And so he gets traded from here to Edmonton, which is, you know, that's about 2,000 miles, 2,500 miles away from us. And, you know, I go over to help Captain load the U-Haul trailer to move the family. And you realize all of a sudden I was looking at my mother, because I grew up in a baseball family, and, you know, we had 5 kids, and my mom would throw 5 kids in the old Studebaker station wagon and drive to the next dugout while my dad was doing his thing. And I remember how frazzled she got. And then I thought about 8 kids across North America. You're going to the insane asylum after that trip. So John called me and said, "Hey, listen, I think I'm going to fly the family out. Do you think you can help me find somebody to drive?" He has if you can imagine, a van that's big enough to hold 8 kids, but he has this huge van and this big trailer. And I made a couple calls, couldn't find anybody, and so I called him back and said, "John, I'll do it." And it was an opportunity to help a guy that had done an awful lot for me personally, you know, as a player and as a great human being. And it was fun. I took 4 days, drove across from Hamilton, which is right here near Toronto, to Edmonton, which is way out west, It was an amazing journey. You know, I went through 6 states, 3 provinces, had two leaf springs break, went through three thunderstorms. It was quite a trip. But it was also real good, too, because I got a lot of really good time to do some stuff that I needed to get done and stop along the way and see some people, stop in Minnesota. I tell you what, I cannot wait to broadcast from that stadium, Neil. That thing is absolutely
special, beautiful. Right?
And, yeah. And so, it was a good trip and, an opportunity. When you have a chance to help somebody, especially when you're talking about a player, a guy that's given so much for you and for his team, I think you have a responsibility to do that. So that's why I did it.
Were you on your own, Jeff?
Yeah, I was on my own. I was like a long haul trucker.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic. How many miles per day were you doing?
It was about 12 hours a day. And, like I said, it was good time because, they had Sirius XM radio. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
But yeah, so you got the NFL radio.
Yeah, they got NFL radio. So I'd listen, to everything that they were broadcasting, listen to college football games, stopped and saw some football people that I wanted to see along the way at Notre Dame and, like I said, in Minnesota. So it was a good trip. It really was a good trip. It's a couple near misses. Because, you're driving that freaking thing, and you don't realize, you think you're just driving, and you got another 20 feet behind you, so you pass somebody, and I had a couple guys flip me the bird when I went past, because I guess I cut them off, so it was not without incident, let me tell you that.
No,
anybody that can back one of those things up is a hero in my books, because after a while, after day one, I said, I'm not going in any place where I can't go straight in and
straight out.
This is backing up stuff. Yeah.
I was following you on Twitter, and I saw you had a couple of mechanical breakdowns. I'm surprised you didn't have an emotional breakdown. My favorite tweet, Jeff, is kind of where you tweet out a little bit of video of yourself, and you try and make it relevant to the NFL. So you're like, hey, I'm in North Dakota, home of Carson Wentz. And then you can see yourself kind of chuckle at the ridiculousness of it all, and you're just like, there's not much here. That's the end of the video.
I tell you what, Neil, it's amazing. It really did. It struck me like that, right? Because when I passed into Wisconsin, you're driving and you're in southern Wisconsin and you think about the Packers and, all of that. And then you get to Minnesota and it's the Vikings and how beautiful the stadium is, and you stop and spend some time with some people at the Vikings that but then you get to North Dakota, and I mean, it's like, it's like driving across the world's biggest snooker table. I mean, it's nothing but flat and green. And I think to myself, Carson Wentz actually came from here. How a great athlete like that could come out of that. I mean, there's nothing there. I mean, it is hours of driving, and this is no exaggeration, you can drive for an hour and a half, and never see another car on that highway.
Wow. So,
I mean, to go from that to Philadelphia, that kid's got to, I give him props, because you talk about being out of place.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, I know we've got lots to talk about in week one and to set the scene for week two, but I just wanted to touch on that because I think it's a fantastic thing you did, and it's one of those examples of, people see you on the TV, they may not know everything about you or what you do, but that sums you up, because some people just talk about doing stuff and you go and do it. And to give up 4 or 5 days, drive 2,000 miles, and I know you, and I know you probably don't think it was that big a deal, actually, at the end of the day, even though it really was.
Well, when I realized it was a big deal was when I finally pulled into the cul-de-sac, the place where John Street, and those six of the eight kids, because the two were too small, but six of the eight kids, and it's like they rushed the truck.
Cool.
And, we opened up the trailer, and they wanted what they wanted was their bikes. They just wanted to get on their bikes and ride their bikes. And I was thinking about it. He had his family there for 5 days. There were no crib for the baby. He made it. Like he told them that they were camping out for 4 days, so they made it fun. But I mean, you realize when those kids rushed to see their toys and their Legos and their bikes and all that stuff, it made it all worthwhile. We always talk about the brotherhood. We talk about playing for the other guy, being unselfish, all those things. And you get a chance to live it. I think it's really a blessing, really.
Those kids were excited to see their toys, Jeff, because they'd seen your driving and your parking. They didn't think they were ever going to see them again.
They were at risk.
Let's talk week one then. We're not going to get into every single game here on Inside the Huddle. That's not what we do. We know you can get that kind of feedback elsewhere. We're going to dig into the big issues and we're going to dive into the big talking points. And I know it's a little while ago now, Jeff, but we have to start with opening night because we haven't had a chance to have a good chat about that. And we won't go into every single statistic, but let's start with the defending Super Bowl champs. They lose 42-27 at home to the Kansas City Chiefs. We can talk about Alex Smith in a couple of minutes. 28 of 35, 368 yards, 4 touchdowns. He stretched the field. He had Kareem Hunt in the backfield, 246 yards from scrimmage. But Jeff, you've got to be some early season alarm bells if you're the Patriots. And maybe let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Bill Belichick and his team give up 42 points and 537 yards.
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, that, you know, for a guy whose reputation is built on defense, and that's really what Bill grew up as a defensive coordinator. He was a great one for Parcells for years and years and years. And Matt Patricia, who's one of the, you know, recognized as one of the best defensive coordinators in the National Football League, and, you know, a team that prides itself on how they play defense, really struggled. And I mean, once Hightower went out of the game, you know, it was, you know, the pass rush was non-existent. You know, you saw some mistakes in the back end, which are not typical of, you know, the Patriots. They're in quarters coverage and Tariq Hill comes out and he gives just a little hint move to the out and then, you know, just runs right past the corner for a big, big score. There's going to be a lot of work done in New England this week. I think that, you know, they're going to get it fixed because that's just the way it is. But I was shocked, really, and I'm not being dramatic when I said I was shocked at the way that Kansas City just went through them, running it, throwing it, whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah, no team fixes itself quite like the New England Patriots, but they've certainly got to do that on defense. They may not have Dante Hightower this week, but there's some fixing to do on offense, Jeff, as well, because Tom Brady dropped back to throw on the first play of the game. He had a wide-open Dwayne Allen at tight end, and he missed him deep. And it kind of set the tone, really, because Brady looked out of sorts as well, and especially on deep passes. We wondered about whether the Patriots would kind of try and open things up and stretch the field, and they did try and do that. And I think Brady only completed 2 of 10. He had a passer rating of about 60 points on those deep throws. That was quite concerning. And a lot of that came without pressure, Jeff. You always say, oh, you got to pressure Tom Brady. He had time to throw, and the Patriots didn't get it done.
Yeah, you know, early in the game, I was really, really interested at what Bobby Sutton was doing. A little surprised, actually, what Bobby Sutton, the defensive coordinator from Kansas City, was doing. There was a lot of three-man rush. And what they were doing, Neil, is they were saturating the low zones, all those crossing routes, all those option routes that, you know, the Patriots are known to throw and Brady's so accurate at. They were going to force him to push the ball down the field. Now, he made some throws, like you say, particularly to Cooks, but he also missed some throws. And interestingly enough, that's kind of a new approach to playing him. Because what they wanted to do, obviously, was force him into the lower percentage throws. Even though there were bigger throws, if he caught them, they were saying that, you know, that's not what you want to do. And they borrowed a page out of Belichick's book, which is force your opponent to beat you with something that they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really well planned by the Kansas City Chiefs coaching staff on both sides of the ball and special teams. And, you know, Alex Smith talked about it after the game about how they had this one circled on their calendar for a whole year. So you can bet there was a lot of time in training camp that they spent on the Patriots.
Yeah, Alex Smith, when he was in San Francisco, he went through the Colin Kaepernick coming up behind him, and eventually Smith lost out to Kaepernick. And he must have been thinking during the offseason, here we go again, when the Chiefs move up to draft Pat Mahomes, a strong-armed, athletic, stretch-the-field kind of quarterback who's not ready yet, but it leaves Alex Smith looking over his shoulder. But, Jeff, this is one of the best performances of Alex's career, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know what? When are we going to take that, you know, that game manager label off this kid? Because you know, Neil, and we say that all the time, you and I talk about it, and the easiest thing to get in pro football is a label. The hardest thing to get rid of is a label. And Alex Smith being labeled a game manager, well, I'm going to tell you something. Just look at the number of W's that kid has hung. Now, he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet, and that's always going to be the, you know, the measuring stick that we unfortunately put on quarterbacks. But I'm going to tell you something. He made every throw he had to make. He looked in control in the pocket. He has, you know, obviously is that still has that athleticism to move around and make plays. But the throws in particular, there were some throws that he put on the back shoulder. He hit the deep ball. He threw the deep ball extremely well. He's accurate underneath. I just thought it was an outstanding performance, not only by him, but that entire football team played extremely well.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of other ones which might have been deemed upsets, Jeff, and it certainly wrecked some of our picks. On the week, I went 7-8 in picks, and you went 8-7. But I'm not sure many people saw Dallas beating the Giants the way they did, 19-3. So obviously the Giants are without Odell Beckham Jr. But this was a Dallas team that lost seven defenders in the offseason. They lost their entire starting secondary, yet that was a smothering performance against the Giants, which I guess is going to be encouraging for Dallas fans, but also very, very worrying for fans of the Big Blue.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. Every Monday I kind of think about who the guys on the weekend did an outstanding job. And I call it Monday morning big ups, and my big up went to Rod Marinelli. I tell you what an outstanding job of playing defense. They lose the one guy that they had in the secondary with any experience was Orlando Scandrick, and then they lose him at halftime and still come out. When you hold Eli Manning to less than 50 yards passing in a half, it was just amazing how well they played. And they're no name front. I mean, you can't, other than Crawford, maybe there's Paella. There's not a lot of guys in that front seven that you say, wow, that's a feared pass rusher right there. But they had great pressure. Sean Lee played outstanding inside. They got their young guy from Notre Dame back playing in there, and you got two really compatible linebackers for the scheme. But just overall, they looked, they were in good position. They played hard. They tackled well. They ran to the ball. They did all the things good defenses do. And that's a credit to Rod Marinelli because. Mm. When you talk about the great defensive coordinators in the NFL, his name rarely comes up, and it really should. I mean, he you look at his track record, and he's been able to do it without great personnel a lot of times in every step of the way. So I give him a big kudos for the weekend. And Neil, Dallas had 45 offensive plays in the first half.
Wow!
Now, just so the fans can understand. On average, last year, in all the games played, it was 64 plays of offense per team in a game. Dallas had 45 at halftime. Well, the Giants' defense has no chance. Mm. You're coming into the first game of the year, and you have not played more than maybe half a football game, in preseason. You don't play your starters in preseason, the full game. So now they go out, and their first time they're on the field, they go 45 plays in one half of football. They got no shot. Wow. No shot.
No.
And, the Cowboys just wore them down and pounded on them. That was, I thought, outstanding again. And that offensive line is, boy, they're good. Oof.
Yeah, the Giants struggled on their offensive line. By contrast, you talk about Dallas running 45 plays in the first half alone. The Giants only ran 52 offensive plays all game. And I think as we go into the negotiation period with Odell Beckham Jr. wanting a new contract, he didn't play on Sunday night. I think he just sticks that tape in and says, look at your offense without me. And another guy, Jeff, as we kind of transition to some of the other games around the NFL. Another guy who might do that is Dwayne Brown, the left tackle for the Houston Texans, who's continuing to hold out because it's in his absence, in a 29-7 home loss, the Texans gave up 10 sacks. 10!
Yeah, I tell you what, Tom Savage offered to pay some of that salary just to get somebody in there that can stay in front of somebody.
Impressive from Jacksonville, of course, but
I tell you what, you know what? It's interesting. You know, that one maybe was the biggest shocker of the weekend.
Right.
And not that Jacksonville won, because I think Jacksonville's maybe a little better than people think they are. But with all of the emotion of what went on, you know, post-hurricane, and you know, everybody anticipated this was going to be another game like when the Saints came back to New Orleans after Katrina. Mm. And it was emotionally in the stadium before the game. I don't know if you saw him. It was just it was electric.
JJ coming out as well, waving the flag.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. But then once the game started, it was like the Texans' offensive line didn't show up, or they sent some high school kids in there to play for them or something. 10 sacks in one game. Calais Campbell sets the all-time Jacksonville record for sacks in a game in the first half.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you look at that, and yet, I mean, you got to have alarm bells if you're a Texans fan, because that was frightening. I mean, they had no chance and couldn't run it, couldn't throw it. You know, they bring in Deshaun Watson, and because of his athleticism, he could stay, you know, he could get away from some guys. But, you know, I mean, it was really, really bad by the Texans. And the Texans' vaunted Super Bowl defense didn't play very well either.
Mm. There were a few teams around the NFL, Jeff, that would have had very worrying opening day performances, and defenses across the league looked like they were on top early compared to offenses. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals at home shut out 20-0 by the Baltimore Ravens. That Ravens defense looks as good as advertised. I think we could look and say Seattle be very disappointed just putting up 3 field goals on the road at Green Bay. That was 17-9 to the Packers over the Seahawks, and the Indianapolis Colts were just terrible. Scott Tolzien threw 2 pick sixes. They lose 46-9 on the road to the Los Angeles Rams. Let's talk about the Seahawks a bit, Jeff, because I looked at their offensive line, and we talked about this quite a bit in the studio about how poor it looked. Yesterday, I was chatting with Ross Tucker, who was an NFL offensive lineman, played for like 5 or 6 different teams. We were just chatting on the phone about a couple of different things, and we weren't recording anything, but at the end, we were talking, myself and Ross, about the games. Ross was at Lambeau Field. He saw that game up close and personal, and he just said, you know, there's just no way Seattle wins the Super Bowl with that offensive line. What did you think about it?
Well, you know what? It's one of those deals that here's my initial reaction about Seattle's offensive line was exactly the same. And that's a Packer front that, you know, it's not exactly one of the ones in that you think strikes fear in your heart when start talking about defensive lines, and they dominated up front against Seattle. Here's what I see, Neil. I see New York Giants struggling. I see Cincinnati Bengals struggling. I see the Colts struggling. I see the Texans struggling, all in the offensive line. And what that tells me is more than ever that the NFL has got to get a developmental lead, because there just aren't enough big guys, and they've got to get those young kids, the big kids, and give them a chance to play. And the way college football's going right now, with all these spread offenses, and you know the way that the systems are built now in college, you're not developing pro offensive linemen. I don't know if you remember when we were at Super Bowl a couple years ago, and we're talking to John Matsko, the line coach from Carolina. He said that. He made that point. He goes, I go now to places like Michigan, Stanford, Notre Dame, where there's a line coach who's been in the NFL, or a system that, you know, more of a run system, more of a, you know, drop back, you know, 5-step, 7-step drop stuff, NFL type stuff. Because what these kids are doing now in college is just, you know, it doesn't help them get ready for pro football. And there's not enough good kids anyway. So I think the NFL's got it, not only for quarterbacks, but for offensive linemen, because it's scary at some of these places.
Well, Jeff, this is where we can actually broaden out and talk about things outside of just the game on the Inside the Huddle podcast here, because you know, one of the other subjects that has been doing the rounds is certainly a reduction in the preseason games, or certainly some kind of reduction in how much you put your starters out there during the preseason, because teams don't want Odell Beckham getting hurt against Cleveland in the second round of preseason games. They don't want to see Julian Edelman go down for the New England Patriots. But We saw Tyreek Hill limping off the field at the end of the New England-Kansas City game with cramps. Allen Robinson goes out with a season-ending injury for the Jags. Stephon Tuitt's got a serious injury for the Steelers. Of course, Eric Berry goes down for the Chiefs. These are the kind of things that you were talking about. You can't really prepare for playing football unless you're playing football. And we saw terrible missed tackles on the Amari Cooper touchdown by Tennessee. There were missed tackles in the Washington-Philadelphia game. And there were blown coverages in the Chicago game, which left Austin Hooper wide open. So it kind of makes you wonder if, well, we do need preseason games. Because, Jeff, I was in Jacksonville, and the players were saying, it's so old school. He said that we hit every day. We never take our pads and helmets off. We're doing the old Vince Lombardi grass drills, the up-downs. It's like proper old school. But the Jags were ready to play, Jeff. It's funny, isn't it? There's still need to prepare, don't we?
Absolutely, and you know, there are two places where you got to play together, and you got to play together a lot, or you're going to have breakdowns, and that's in the secondary, and that's on the offensive line. And if you saw it even in New England, right? Like I said, they blow a coverage, and Tyreek Hill gets a big one and that should never happen. But again, when guys don't play together, when you haven't seen and communicated together, all those things. That's what you get. And like you said, the tackling wasn't very good in the first week. And you don't have to look any further to know how important training camp is than to watch Le'Veon Bell for the Steelers. Because obviously his timing was not there. You saw how ragged the handoffs were. He didn't, you know, he's always been kind of a hesitation runner at the line of scrimmage. But he just didn't look like he was ready to play. And that's the reality. You've got to play the game. So it is it's a catch-22. How do you keep them safe, but also how do you get them ready to play? Because, you know, football is such a unique sport, and you can't do it by running sprints. You can't do it by seeing a personal trainer. You got to do it by playing the game. And, you know, there is some risk involved in that too.
Jeff, I alluded to that Bears-Falcons game. Atlanta held on for a 23-17 win, and it was a case of holding on because – Mike Glennon had a few shots at the end zone at the end and his receivers got the dropsies. The Bears could have stolen that game and then we would be talking about the Super Bowl hangover. And, you know, a win's a win and can't take it away from Atlanta now. But Dan Quinn probably avoided some awkward questioning and a need to pick his team up. He'd be glad they escaped Chicago with the win.
Boy, I tell you what, you look at those plays at the end of the game and they have chances. And whether it's, you know, a drop or the ball wasn't, you know, none of those catches were easy catches, right? And, you know, Glennon didn't put the ball right on the guy where he needed it. But those are catches pro guys should make. I just think that, you know, Atlanta, like we said, we talked about the reality of Super Bowl hangover. They got away with one, but you can't let that fact that you snuck one out against a team that you should have beaten by 8 or 10 points in your opener hide the fact that there's some things that the Falcons got to get fixed. And I think Dan Quinn will do that. I think he understands that. And again, it'll be interesting to see how they come out and play in week two.
Jeff, I was disappointed by the Cardinals, how they finished that game against the Detroit Lions. And I know it was typical Matthew Stafford. Detroit trailed going into the fourth quarter. Well, that's Matthew Stafford time. He had 8 fourth quarter comeback wins last year, which is an NFL record. Cardinals end up losing that game 35-23 in Detroit. And to me, it was just the sloppiness again. Carson Palmer has 3 interceptions. And, you know, this is a veteran quarterback. This is a quarterback who, well, just from a layman's point of view, looks like he's never recovered from that shell-shocked NFC Championship game of a year and a half, 2 years ago now. So at the end of the 2015 season, this was disappointing for me. What did you make of the Cardinals and then really kind of how the Lions finished that game?
Well, I think when you're talking about the Cardinals, Neil, it is cause for concern because your quarterback, who's the guy that you're counting on to get you to the Super Bowl, did not play well at all. You saw big mistakes on defense. You know, they gave up way, way, way too many big plays. You know, that defense is too talented to play that way. They didn't in any phase of the game play particularly well. You lose your number one threat on offense, the injury in the game, that's a concern. You know, how hurt is he? What's his status? How long is he going to be out? And then from the Lions' standpoint, you know, you see it, you see some signs of life there. You know, that defense, that young kid they got playing middle linebacker, I think he's going to really, really help solidify that defense. They're opportunistic. They're going to make some plays. They're going to give up some plays. They're going to make some plays. And Matthew Stafford, what can you say about that guy? I mean, the throw he makes to Galladay when they beat Patrick Peterson, what a throw that was. Mm. And I just think that it's almost better with the Lions to be behind them going into the fourth quarter. When it's comeback time, that guy finds another zone, man. I'm telling you, he made some throws, and I mean some big-time throws. Yeah. Under pressure, and you know he's special. Jeff, you know, one thing about him, you know, you can say all you want, but you know, the guy makes plays, and he doesn't have the greatest supporting cast. They're a little better than I think people think at receiver, but that offensive line is the one that, you know, that's going to be in the top five in the NFL. And you know, he stays alive and makes plays. He's a heck of a player.
Yeah, he certainly showed his moxie again on Sunday night. It's not how you start, it's how you finish, because his first throw in the NFL after becoming the highest paid player in NFL history was a pick six to Justin Bethel, but he bounced back.
Yes, he did, and he bounced back in a big way, and that's what great quarterbacks do. They have that, you know, they say all the time about how corners have to have a short memory because you're going to get beat. Well, same thing's true with quarterbacks. You got to be able to wash away a play. You know, he makes a bad throw, goes to the house, you know, and again, everybody starts, all the tongues start wagging about, you know, the highest paid player, and yada, yada, yada. And he just put it away and goes and keeps throwing. You know, that's what the good ones do.
What did you think of DeShone Kizer? We saw him on Sky Sports in the game between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, so he threw for one touchdown, he ran for another. There were ups and downs there, Jeff, but we've got to remember this is a 21-year-old kid who's the youngest quarterback in the NFL by more than a year.
Yeah, he should be, you know, in math class at Notre Dame right now. But he came out early, and you see flashes, you know. And again, I hope with him that it's not too much too early.
Yeah.
You know, that we get into that Blake Bortles, you know, David Carr syndrome,
Jeff,
where a guy has to play before he's ready to play.
Yeah, we see flashes, but he'll see stars if he doesn't learn how to slide.
you're exactly right. But all in all, I thought, you know, when you looked at the Browns, I thought the Browns are showing some signs. Mm. You know, they're you know, they're more aggressive on defense, and Greg Williams is getting them, you know, to attack the ball on defense. Their offensive line is really pretty doggone good, and you know, they Crowell will give them a spark. They're not great outside of receiver yet, but you know, there's signs of improvement there. And I think if you're in Cleveland, you gotta understand it's going to be a process. It's going to be a couple years, but if they keep moving like they're moving right now, Christian Kirksey, I thought, played well again, and so you know, I think I see some signs of improvement in Cleveland.
What did you make of Marshawn Lynch, Jeff, in Oakland's 26-16 win of Tennessee? He had 76 yards rushing and a 16-yard catch, so he didn't set the world on fire, but what did you make of Beast Mode being back, and does he still have it?
I think you know, you've got to understand and go deeper than the statistics, because I think it was 12 carries for 76 yards, I believe. But when they got into 4-minute football, when they had to close out the game, that's when he really played well. And you saw he runs over a defensive lineman to, you know, to keep the chains moving. That's what they need from him. That's what he can provide for them. He doesn't have to be, in my opinion, Neil, he doesn't have to be, for the Raiders certainly, 100-yard back every week.
Right.
What he has to be able to do is be that physical presence that when you're trying to pick up a key first down, you're around the goal line, you're trying to close the game out in 4-minute football, now he can be your guy. And I think he showed in the game that he still has that. And, you know, offensively, that's kind of a little bit the missing piece that the Raiders had. Mm. So now they've got that big physical back. You know, and I think the other thing he does for you is you know, he adds a certain element to your team.
Yeah, he gives you a swagger.
Exactly. He gives you a slugger, and he gives you a guy that's popular with his teammates. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the thing, Jack Del Rio's interview after the game, where he was off in the, you know, Jack's on the podium, and he's off on the sideline, off on the side, popping off about, you know, how well he played, yada, yada. But he's that guy. He's just a guy that's fun to be around, and the guys like him, and I think he's a good team guy, and, you know, he's so embedded in that Oakland community. I think it's a really, really good signing by the Raiders, and I think, you know, it's going to be really help them. Now, if that defense, that back end of that defense can get fixed, they're going to be a good football team.
So Marshawn Lynch came out of retirement, Jeff. He kind of insisted on the trade to the Raiders. I think he knew his time in Seattle was done, but Seattle, that perception was that Seattle were happy for him to move on because he was too much of a leader in Seattle and it wasn't becoming Russell Wilson's team. Now, just flipping back to that Green Bay and Seattle game, Russell Wilson could have done with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield because Eddie Lacy had 5 carries for 3 yards.
Boy, I tell you, you know, you got to be really careful about those kinds of things. You know, obviously they want that team to be Russell's team. And like you say, I think, you know, that was never going to be the case as long as Marshawn was there. And, you know, now it's Russell's team, but, you know, they did not run the ball at all well. Mm. And I'm just going to say this. I'm not an Eddie Lacy fan. I just think that, you know, there's a guy that's had historic weight issues. He's underachieved. You look at it and you go, man, oh, man, oh, man, that's your number one back. That's the guy that's going to be your bell cow. It's going to be a long season because he did not look. He looked sluggish again. I know he's lost some weight, but, you know, he reminds me of the other kid from Alabama, Richardson,
Trent Richardson, yeah.
It was kind of the same guy, you know, just flashed for a minute and then, you know, was out of the league 3 years later.
I want to stick with running backs, Jeff, and go to Monday Night Football. We'll talk about the Minnesota Vikings' 29-19 win over the New Orleans Saints because the numbers are quite interesting when we look at Adrian Peterson's return to Minnesota. He had 6 carries for 18 yards, not much different than the other running backs on the roster. Alvin Kamara had 7 for 18, Mark Ingram 6 for 17, but in terms of total snaps played, Peterson played 9 snaps the entire game. Kamara played 28, Ingram 25. And we saw Adrian Peterson kind of marching after Sean Payton on the sidelines during the game. We don't know what was said, but he didn't look a happy camper. This is not the best of starts to the Adrian Peterson era in New Orleans.
Nope, and I agree with you. You know, I think there were some flashes of demeanor on the sidelines that were, you know, I won't say negative, but they were, the guy wanted to play. He wanted to have the ball in his hands. It was obviously going back to Minnesota was an emotional thing for him. And then to have to stand around and watch was really uncomfortable for him. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out because it's, you know, there's only one football and, you know, he wants to have it. He's used to having it, you know, 20, 25, 30 times a game. Now he's probably going to see it 5 or 6 times a game, the way they're built. I'm not sure that's going to end up as a very happy marriage. But on the other side of the coin, man, oh, man, Dalvin Cook. You know, he was my early call for Rookie of the Year, and I'll tell you why I think that is the case. Just like with Zeke last year, he's in a system that's going to feature him. He's going to get the touches, and I think that young back really, really helps Minnesota.
Yeah, he had 22 carries for 127 yards. And importantly, Jeff, he did an Adrian Peterson impersonation. He had 14 for 48 in the first 3 quarters, 8 for 79 in the final period. That was when AP used to take over games.
Yeah, and that's what you say. You're looking for a guy to help you close a game out. You look at them offensively last night, and, you know, Adam Thielen, who I think had 9 catches, he's an undrafted free agent. Stephon Diggs is a 5th rounder. You know, they're getting some mileage, particularly at receiver, out of guys that, you know, were really not very well thought of when they were coming out in the draft, but they're making plays for him. How about Bradford look like the Bradford that we've always wanted to see? Mm. You know, he showed the accuracy that he showed at Oklahoma. He moved around well in the pocket. It was good body language. He was, he was into the game. He was excited. I mean, the Vikings offensively, you know, you talk about teams that have rebuilt their offensive line. They really, I thought, ran the ball well and for the most part, protected Bradford real well last night.
Sam Bradford was the player that the Vikings were saying to me all summer, Jeff, just wait and see, because it's his first full off season in our system. You know, he was kind of doing everything on the fly last year. He's going to be more comfortable. He's going to open it up more, you know, because he set the NFL record last year with, 71% completion percentage, and everyone accused him of dinking and dunking. Well, he looked a lot more comfortable on Monday night.
Absolutely. You know, here's another guy that's in a contract year. Mm. I mean, right now, you know, you think about how well he played. If he can continue to play that way and the money that Stafford commanded, because when he got that big contract, all the other quarterbacks in the league now, the Kirk Cousins and the, you know, Sam Bradford's, the guys that are in their contract years are now looking at that and saying, okay, that's the bar now. Mm. You know, he stands to make a lot of money if he can continue to play at that level, because there's no way the Vikings are going to let him get away.
No, absolutely not. Jeff, let's turn our attention to week two in just a second, but I can remind people that they can play the NFL Challenge game. So you go to www.nflchallenge.co.uk. There is an Inside the Huddle podcast league. My team is called Face for Radio, and Jeff's team is called Jeff's Cap Locks. Full disclosure here, Jeff, because we're going to help you out. You were on the road last week, so Nick Pike took charge of your team for 1 week only. You're in charge from now on. But do you want me to give you the results?
Yeah, please.
So I scored my team. I had Buffalo's rushing offense who helped me out, and I had Antonio Brown. So my team scored 123 points. So out of the 154 teams that are currently in our Inside the Huddle podcast league, I'm ranked fifth. You, sir, scored 53 points, and you are in place number 153 out of 154. So you need to have some words with Nick Pike. He's got some splaining to do.
All right, I don't have to have words. I have to have two words. You're fired.
You're in charge. You're in charge now, Jeff. But people,
I'm thinking it's over.
Yeah, exactly. And if people have already got their team in place for week one, but they weren't in our league, you can shift your team over into our league. So get involved at nflchallenge.co.uk. So last week, Jeff, you went 8-7. I went 7-8. It wasn't a banner week. Let's get going on week two, which begins on Thursday with Houston at Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We have to.
We do.
Okay. Houston at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Houston wins, but I tell you what. This one is all the makings of a stinker, because neither of these teams, you know, Cincinnati could not protect. Isn't it amazing, Neil? 2 years ago, we were talking about Cincinnati maybe having the best roster in football. And now you look at that team, and that offensive line has, you know, just kind of deteriorated. They're all over the place. They're gone. And they can't protect the quarterback. They can't stop anybody on defense. You know, they've really lost an awful lot of good football players and haven't replaced them. And that's really a concern. Andy Dalton, I think, got exposed actually in that game, because, you know, all of a sudden now he's got to make plays, and, you know, he just couldn't create plays, particularly outside the pocket. He looked like a deer in the headlights against that pass rush. So, you know, I know the Ravens' defense is good, but, man, oh, man, oh, man, that performance by the Bengals was bad.
Jeff, I'll just take you – I'm going to pick Houston as well, and I'll just take you behind the curtain a little bit. We finished on air on Sky Sports about 1:30 in the morning just as the Sunday night games kick off. We lead up to the Sunday night game, and then – that's just, we show that feed, but we're not in the studio for the Sunday night game. And I'm standing there in the studio on my own recording links for the highlight shows of various games. So, you know, check out the highlights of the Cleveland Browns against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Check out the highlights of Dallas against the New York Giants. And up came the script that I had to read for the Houston-Cincinnati game. And kind of jokingly, I said, well, thanks for joining us for the highlights of this one, because there's no way you stayed up and watched it live, because, I mean, it's a stinker already. I mean, it's just they both couldn't have looked more abject in week one. Someone's got to win in week two, and they're certainly going to be hungry. I'm going Houston, but I don't think this is going to be a classic.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to go with Houston. I think that the Houston will bounce back. I think, you know, they're going to start Deshaun Watson. You know, so I think that'll he'll give them a spark and they'll find a way to win it. But again, that Houston's defense better show up too.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to Sunday then. And the first game on my list here is Cleveland at Baltimore. So it's a tough start for DeShone Kizer, because he goes against Pittsburgh, who looked improved on defense, and then he goes up against Baltimore. It's in Baltimore. I like what the Ravens did on defense. I'm going Baltimore, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm agree with you. I think Baltimore at home is going to be a little bit of a tough ask for that young quarterback, and you know, it's hard it's a hard learning curve in the NFL, particularly when you're in that division with those great defenses.
Let's move on to Arizona at Indianapolis. So the Cardinals on the road second week in a row, but fortunately they don't have to play an NFL team. They're going to play the Colts. It was miserable. Jeff, you said it last week. It's not just the Andrew Luck stuff. It's looking like it's shaping up to be a long season in Indianapolis.
Yep, yeah. Man, like I said, no luck, no chance. Mm. So you don't have him. And you know what? When you think about it, when that kid comes back, here we go again with him having to put all of it on his shoulders, because, you know, I mean, it was not a good performance at all. And, you know, there's a lot of holes in that roster, and Chris Ballard has a job in front of him now. I'm going to tell you something. You're looking at a roster that needs to be turned over, and somehow, some way, they got to find somebody to protect the quarterback.
Yeah, no Andrew Luck again this week for the Colts. That's already been confirmed. He's out, so it's going to be Scott Tolzien again, or they give Jacoby Brissett the start. But I'm going Arizona on the road. What about you, Jeff?
Arizona.
All right, both going Arizona there. Let's move on to... this is a good one. Minnesota at Pittsburgh. This is a really good one, given how the Vikings started and the Steelers. Who do you like in this one, Jeff?
You know, I think that I'm going to give the Steelers the nod because it's at home. But I'll tell you what, this is one. If you like physical football, this is one you better tune into, because these two teams will hit each other. You're talking about two teams also have some threats down the field. I just think that Pittsburgh, because they're more dynamic at receiver, I think they got more ways to get on top of you, and I'm going to give a nod to Pittsburgh.
All right, well, I'm going to go the other way, because I went against the Vikings in week one. I actually picked the Saints for the upset, and I've got to speak to Carl Rudolph on the phone tomorrow, Jeff, and I can't back against him twice in the same week. So I'm going Minnesota, and I think their defense is up to the task. The Buccaneers finally get to play a game after Hurricane Irma forced the postponement of their game in Miami. Chicago at Tampa Bay. I'm going to go Bucs to get a win at home, Jeff. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Bucs will, you know, again, it's like you said, it's delayed their season by a week, and it's going to force them to lose their bye week. So this is a big game for them. They need to get off on the right foot, and I think the Bears coming in there are a team that they can beat at home, and certainly that area has been ravaged by that storm, so I think that's going to be an emotional game in Tampa this week.
Yeah, we got games coming up in Tampa and Jacksonville that we kind of keep an eye on, because there were serious floods in Jacksonville as well, so we'll see how that progresses as the week goes on. Our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday night features two of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history in Tom Brady and Drew Brees. It's New England at New Orleans. So this is it could potentially be a get healthy game for Tom Brady, Jeff, against that Saints defense. But, you know, here comes Drew Brees against a struggling Patriots defense. It's in New Orleans, where the Saints are often much tougher to play against. Who do you like here?
Well, I just can't imagine the Patriots going 0-2 to start the season.
No,
I
me either.
You know, I just can't see that. You know, Breeze is amazing. Some of the throws he made last night are, I mean, the accuracy factor is incredible. But I just, me, you've got to believe that the Patriots are going to bounce back and fix some things, and they'll come in and, you know, get the win on the road in New Orleans.
All right, so both going Patriots in that one. Let's move on to Philadelphia at Kansas City. Chiefs are at home, Jeff. They've had a mini bye week after playing on Thursday night. I know they've got no Eric Berry, but I like the way they're shaping up. I'm going to go Chiefs at home. What about you?
I'm gonna go the other way. I think there's going to be a little bit of a hangover after that big win in New England. I think that, you know, Philadelphia knows Kansas City pretty well because, you know, again, that's kind of where they were birthed from. If you want to, Doug Peterson was the offensive coordinator for Andy. They worked together for years and years and years. They're very familiar with each other. I think the Eagle defense is better than people think it is, and I think I would not be surprised if the Eagles don't go down there and steal a win on the road.
All right, let's move on to Tennessee at Jacksonville. Big game in the AFC South. The Titans are looking for their first win. Jacksonville set out their stall and showed us, Jeff, they're going to be about defense. They only allowed Blake Bortles to throw 21 times. Leonard Fournette had 26 carries, 100 yards, and a touchdown. Jacksonville are going to be very physical by the looks of it. Can they take the Titans at home? What do you think?
Well, I'm surprised there's even going to be a game there, Neil. You look at the flooding in Jacksonville. I don't know how the heck they're going to get that stadium ready to play.
The stadium runs alongside the river, Jeff, as well.
Yeah, exactly. And if they do, I kind of like Jacksonville. Now, that's a scary, scary proposition now for the Titans to open 0-2 and to lose a game in your division. So it's a huge game for the Titans. But I like the looks of that Jacksonville team, and I think that, you know, they're headed in the right direction. That defense played the way they're supposed to play, and much more aggressive than they were in the past. And, you know, Dante Fowler made some plays. You can see how well they run, how physical they are. So I'm gonna give Jacksonville a nod.
Yeah, I'm going Jags as well, Jeff. And this is a team that used to be all kind of brief flashes and false promises. I don't know if they'll be that exciting to watch in 2017, but they are being built in the image of, I almost said they're two head coaches, because it feels like that sometimes with Tom Coughlin and Doug Marone, but this is going to be a physical team as they showed on opening night. So I'm going Jags there. What about Buffalo at Carolina?
Ah, boy. This is an interesting one. You know, Sean McDermott going home, you know, where he was defensive coordinator, you know, being the general manager from Buffalo, came out of that Carolina system. I think Carolina wins it, but I saw some signs in Buffalo in that game. You know, you look at them, the first thing about them that you saw improvement was the penalties. They didn't take dumb penalties like they had in the past. They were much better disciplined, much better structurally. So I think Sean McDermott's doing a job in Buffalo. I just don't think he has enough players right now to beat a team like Carolina.
No, not on the road as well. So I'm going Carolina in that one. The New York Jets at the Oakland Raiders. Jets got off to a losing start. Josh McCown scored on a quarterback sneak. Didn't throw a touchdown pass. He was picked off twice. I can't see them going all the way out west and beating Oakland. I'm going to go Raiders, Jeff. You?
I agree with you 100%. Raiders all the way on that one.
If I was going to get a... Who's going to win, Jeff?
Raiders.
Who?
Come on. The Raiders.
There we go. That's what I wanted. Crikey. It's like a Bill Belichick press conference.
No.
So you'll start yourself coughing. We'll never get going again. Let's go on to the...
We're on to the Jets, Neil.
All right. Another team that's going to head east to west is the Miami Dolphins. They're going to go and play the Los Angeles Chargers. It'll be the Dolphins' first game of the new season. And they've got quite a schedule coming up, Jeff, because they're going to play out at LA. Then they fly back east and play against the Jets. And after that, they fly straight over to play in London against the Saints. So can the Dolphins get off to a winning start out west?
I think so. I really think so. I think that... I think the Dolphins are going to be an improved team, and I think that this extra week to prepare now will help them. And, you know, they need to get off on a good foot because, like you said, they've got a tough schedule coming up, and they do not have a bye week. So this is an important game for them on the road.
Yeah, I'm going to go Dolphins as well to win that one. Just on the no bye week, Jeff, does that worry you?
Well, I think it does because, you know, you're talking about 16 straight weeks now, and it's a grind anyway. But when you do have a bye week, it gives you that week to heal. It gives you that week to kind of catch your breath. And now that Dolphin team is going to have to play, and Tampa the same, they're going to have to play 16 straight weeks of, you know, NFL football. And that's an awful, tough ask for your bodies and for your psyche and all of it.
All right, let's move on to Washington at the LA Rams. So Washington, they showed some flashes against Philadelphia, but then fell away. The Rams, I think, is a deceiving one because of how poor the Colts were. I'm going to go Washington to win this one on the road, Jeff.
You know what? I agree with you. I think it's, you could see the impact of Wade Phillips on defense there. He's going to have Aaron Donald now this week, which will, you know, you put him in there with Tanzel Smart, that kid out of Tulane that they got in the sixth round, is a good young player. I think they'll be good up front, but I'm not sold on them yet. You're going to have to show me a couple more weeks of production and particularly at the quarterback. I want to see what Goff's able to do this week. This is a much better test for him. I'm going to take the Skins.
All right, we're both going Washington there. Jeff, I probably shouldn't say this too loudly as we're recording this in the NFL offices, but, well, you wonder why they moved back to LA. That stadium was barely half full last week.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, Neil, that people don't realize that even the small stadium at Home Depot Stadium or whatever that thing is called, where the Chargers are playing, they haven't sold that out either. And that thing seats about 28,000 to 30,000. So, you know, that's a major cause of concern. When you can't sell out that small a stadium, you've got some issues. But, again, I think people have to understand L.A. is a tough market to crack. And, you know, those teams have pulled out on them in the past, and the Raiders left L.A. So L.A. is really a college sports town with UCLA and USC there. And, you know, it's going to take some time. They're going to have to win some games. They're going to have to put some, you know, they're going to have to put people in the seats by, you know, putting some W's in their record. And I think that's just the reality of that L.A. market.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way at the moment. Let's move on to what's our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday. It's the Dallas Cowboys at the Denver Broncos. So we've talked a bit about Dallas. Denver, they ran out winners against the LA Chargers. So it was 24-21 in the end. Trevor Siemian, two touchdown passes, 219 yards. They lent on their defense a bit as well and the running game. This is in Denver, Jeff. I don't know. I just think Dallas at the moment, based on what I saw on Sunday night, that Dallas are the better team. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think you know, the Dallas is much better balanced. And, you know, we talk about playing complementary football, and that's where the offense, the defense, and the special teams all play together. And I think the Cowboys have that figured out. You know, they run the ball. They keep their defense off the field. The defense doesn't give up big plays, keeps the ball in front, you know, as attacks the football and gets turnovers. And their special teams are real solid. So I like the Cowboys, the way they're built right now and the way they're playing. And it's always a tough one when you go up to Denver to play at Mile High. But I just think that the Cowboys have a better overall football team.
All right, so we're both going Dallas in that one. San Francisco at Seattle. We'll try and whiz through a couple of these. I'm going to go Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle bounces back in this one, I agree.
All right, so Atlanta opened their new stadium on Sunday Night Football. This will be the third of our triple header games on Sunday. Green Bay at Atlanta. Jeff, I think this was a shellacking in favor of the Falcons when they met in the NFC Championship game, but I think Green Bay exacts some revenge here and spoils the opening night party. What do you think?
You know what? I agree with you, and I'm anxious to see, because this will be validation. If that Packer defense can go down and play like they played in Green Bay last week in Atlanta, then I'm going to say, boy, the Packers now jump up in my power ratings real fast.
So we're going both going Green Bay?
I like it.
All right, and the last one, Detroit at the New York Giants. It's in New York, but there were a lot of road wins in week one. I'm going to go for Detroit to get a road win in week two here.
Yeah, and again, I think that we saw some of the Achilles heels, if you will, of the Giants. You know, that offense has got to get some balance to it. They've got to find a way to run the football and you know, not put their defense in peril like they did last week against the Cowboys.
So you're going Detroit?
No, I'm actually going to go New York.
Sorry, I was reading
the... I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to go to New York because I just think that the Lions could run the ball better. I'd take the Lions. But I think that the Lions kind of play into the strength of the Giants' defense. You know, the Giants' defense has got those three great pass rushers and that good secondary. So I think they'll play well enough on defense to eke out a close one.
See, I thought you'd already answered, Jeff. I wasn't doing the whole take it one game at a time thing. I was already onto Twitter looking for questions, so I was onto the mailbag. So I apologize. I'm going to take two questions, and then we'll wrap up because we're getting close to being out of time. Although I always say that, and it's a podcast, so we can talk as long as we like, actually. I don't know why I ever say that.
I mean, exactly.
I never really thought about that before. Well, I'll take my time reading these ones then. Tim Ellis says, does the standard of NFL tackling take some of the gloss off some of the bigger plays? And he points out Austin Hooper's long catch and run against the Chicago Bears and I guess Amari Cooper's touchdown against Tennessee, Jeff. There's a couple there where, I mean, was Amari's a great effort or was it poor tackling in your mind? And again, same with Austin Hooper.
Well, I think the Amari Cooper one was interesting because Jackson, the corner, there were plays earlier in the game where you could see he really doesn't want to tackle very much. And he's one of those corners that just wants to cover and not tackle anybody. And I thought what was interesting was that the Raiders made him tackle. They threw balls in front of him and made him tackle. And on the Cooper touchdown, he has a chance after the catch right away to make the play. And he just kind of goes in there and kind of falls off of the guy. And then, you know, Cooper got shoved into the end zone by the offensive lineman. So I was more impressed, I think, with Hooper's straight arms in the open field where he just knocked those guys to their knees with his straight arm on those long balls he caught.
Jeff, this is a good one, actually, from Chris Brophy, who says, if you were Andrew Luck, would you want to come back for the Colts this season? I mean, I know Andrew very well. He's such a competitor. He loves this game. He'll want to play even if they're 0-14, and he's only coming back for the last two games of the season. But this might become an issue or a question the longer he's out injured because, I mean, it just feels like he's not anywhere close to coming back. He's not thrown a pass yet. You think of quarterbacks who come back, he's going to have to go through almost like a training camp in season to get himself ready to play. He's not practicing yet. So we're a few weeks away, I guess, from Andrew Luck coming back. And you just think at some point, do you just shut him down for the year? I mean, this could be something worth monitoring.
Well, I think it's, you know, let's be conspiracy theorists here a little bit.
Go on, I like it.
Let's say he can't come back till week 9, right? And I'm just throwing a number out there. And let's say you're 1-8. At that point, do you make the decision to put him on ice and save him and use that, I'm going to use that word that everybody likes, then tank it? And now you take that draft pick that you could get, and if there's not a dominant player that you need, you trade it back for more draft picks to help improve your roster. That's one of the things that they're going to have to talk about, at least inside those offices, Chris Ballard and that organization, because, boy, you sure don't want your franchise guy out there too soon against that offensive line and getting more beat up than he already is. And then, you know, for what? You know, what do you gain? The bottom line is the bottom line. You know, you're trying to build something in Indianapolis, and you know, you got to look at every possible avenue to do that.
One more question I'll take, Jeff, and I think this one is again kind of setting the table for something we've got to watch play out over the course of the season. Nick Thompson asks, how good can Jared Goff be under Sean McVay, and have the Rams genuinely turned a corner? Or was that just a showcase of how bad the Colts are? I think with Jared Goff, Jeff, like you just alluded to it there in making the picks, it's going to be tougher opposition this week, and we need to kind of see how that plays out. I will just tell you, obviously from their time together in Washington and seeing how he speaks about him, Sean McVay thinks Kirk Cousins is special, really special. So that is hanging out there as an off-season carrot for the Rams, but they've got to kind of deal with seeing what they've got out of Jared Goff first. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I think there's a couple plays. I think San Francisco feels the same way about Kirk Cousins. So, you know, if Kirk can stay healthy and have a good year, he's going to have plenty of opportunities and to make a lot of money and go places where he's wanted. With Goff, you watch the game, and I thought McVay and the staff in Los Angeles did a great job of giving him things that he could do, and they were in control of the game. And, you know, so he could run the play action and the quicks and all that stuff and make enough plays, you know, lean on the running game a little bit. What's going to be interesting for me to see is when he gets behind and he has to throw it from the pocket, and is he going to be good enough? That's what I want to see. Mm. Not the play actions, not the rollout, not that kind of stuff where he has one, you know, it's easier for him, right? But when you have to, the mark of a quarterback to me, Neil, is when, can you win from the pocket? Can you win when you're down by three and you got to drive it, you know, to score a touchdown to win the football game? That's the guy that I'm looking for. And we got to see that about Goff.
Right. And that's why, actually, as we wrap it all up and round it all back, Jeff, that's why, although he threw an interception on his first throw of the new season, that's why Matthew Stafford got the big bucks, because he comes alive in the fourth quarter. That's when you want your quarterback to be showing he's got the big cojones.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the quarterbacks. And you talk about the great ones, but they're all the guys that can do that, right? Mm. Whether it's Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Ben Roethlisberger, whether it's Philip Rivers, Drew Brees. I mean, the guys that you, Matthew Stafford, the guys that you recognize as the great ones, all have that ability to take a game over and win a game from the pocket. Now, that next level of guy, the Sam Bradfords, and, you know, right now the Mariotas and Jameis Winstons and those guys that are aspiring to get to that level, they still have to prove it. Their body of work isn't there yet, and I think that's where we're at with Jared Goff.
Yeah. All right, we'll see how it all plays out in week two. We are out of time, even though there is no time limit. I just want to get some lunch, basically. I'm just hungry. So, and I'm sure you've gone an hour or so without a coffee, Jeff, so you'll probably do another one.
No, I've got one sitting right next to me now.
I thought you had. So this has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk. There's so much to talk about. We need a 2-hour show or two a week. Until next week, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.